I remember seeing people in trees. I remember giving out food. I remember having small protests. I remember rats.
They were there before the encampment, and they stayed and grew with the encampment.
Hi, how are you?
I remember when I went to a protest.
She was an Occupy Oakland.
Uh-huh. But she was there maybe, she was a year old, but she was out
wow.
there.
I remember I went to a protest with Joyous, and when I went to a protest, cops were killing and stuff and putting people to jail, and they're doing all that other stuff.
Oh, wow. Did you like the protest?
Mm-hmm. It was fun.
What did you like about it?
Joyce, I didn't like nothing about it, but Joyce liked it so much.
Oh, really?
I went to bed in the car. Are you a news reporter?
I am.
Oh.
That was Joyous Diasis and Samara Ward talking with Oakland poet and activist Nita B and Making Contact's Marie Che about Occupy. This week on Making Contact, we revisit the people in the trees, the protest, the police, as this month marks the 5-year anniversary of Occupy. Producer Marie Che takes us to Zuccotti Park out in Wall Street and Oakland, California. We try to gain insight with some of the folks that were on the ground. We revisit how Occupy started, how it fell apart, and what people learned in those remarkable few months. I'm your host, RJ Lozada. Stay tuned.
We begin this year and this administration in the midst of an unprecedented crisis that calls for unprecedented action. If we do not act boldly and swiftly, a bad situation could become dramatically worse.
Entrance of Zuccotti Park, there's this geometric red structure that we would refer to as like the red thing. Anytime we had a meeting or needed, you know, some place, this was it. And it got to the point where, you know, it was very competitive to have a meeting under the red thing. You know, like everyone wanted to meet there.
September 17th, 2011. Occupy Wall Street, Zuccotti Park. 99% versus the 1%. A response to the economic meltdown and continual economic depression experienced in the United States and around the world. Before they were dubbed Occupy Wall Street, they were the New York General Assembly. An exercise, an expression of direct democracy. Marie met up with activist and filmmaker Marissa Holmes, who was a member of the General Assembly and then a working group facilitator for Occupy Wall Street, for a brief tour of Zuccotti Park.
Zuccotti Park was actually the third choice on the list. So Wall Street was number one. The second one was Chase Plaza. And both of those were barricaded off on the day of. So we ended up making the decision to come to Zuccotti Park. It was beautiful. I don't even know, like, thousands of people were, you know, were listening to each other and speaking and, you know, being heard by one another. And so there was this question, you know, on the table during the assembly, like, should we occupy or not? Because the call had gone out to Occupy Wall Street, of course, and a lot of people were there for that reason. But we wanted to make sure that whoever was engaged in the action had a say in how that action was happening, right? So how it was organized. So we opened up the space in the assembly to, you know, to really ask people, like, what did it mean to occupy and whether or not they're willing to do that. And and after a lot of discussion, people consented, this crowd of thousands of people consented to stay and occupy Zuccotti Park.
Last week!
What was happening at Zuccotti Park and quickly spreading to cities and towns across the country was different, and many in the mainstream news media weren't sure what to make of it.
There is no doubt the Occupy Wall Street protests have ignited support around the country. What is it about the movement that's drawing growing numbers of Americans?
As the Occupy Wall Street movement grows in numbers across the country, it is also accumulating trash and lots of it.
It's a garbage bin down there.
They're not only occupying space, the protesters at Wall Street are also blocking businesses and clogging the legal system. Are the Occupy Wall Street folks really just trying to shut down the economy?
The Occupy Wall Street movement is not a spontaneous protest against economic inequality. It is a well-thought-out campaign to bring down the infrastructure of this country, to turn us into a Western European-type entitlement state.
They put their tent there for a couple of weeks. Next thing you know, the sod is dead.
And that's why I don't sleep on my lawn anymore. It kills my grass. I go indoors.
All right. I thought you were sleeping in the doghouse.
Right, that's true.
This was the scene last night in Oakland, California. Is this America? You better believe it is. We are witnessing 30 years of failed Republican economic policies all coming to a head.
In addition to all of this, people were struggling to hold down the camps.
So, like, there was, of course, like, the East and the West Side, you know, divide that happened. And this is something that, like, The Daily Show loved to make fun of. But basically, the West Side was, you know, where, like, the media was and the assembly and, like, you know, people with their laptops and, you know, Apple products and whatever. And then the West Side was, like, the ghetto of the park. You know, this is, like, how it was described in the mainstream. But also, like, internally in the camp, like, there were real divisions, you know, between people who, like, had places to go because of, you know, like, their own access to stuff, right? And people who didn't, and especially over time when it became more of like a homeless encampment. Yeah, you know, like people were here for different reasons too. Like some people were here because they really just needed access to services that they didn't have other places, that the state wasn't providing for them, right? And we were providing like three meals a day and, you know, like a tent and a community of support, or trying to. So I don't know, it's tricky. And then also to do all of that like in a situation where, like, you're under constant repression, right? Like, of course those things are going to come up because we still live, like, under the material conditions of capitalism, and, like, you can't just, like, having a, like, a truly liberated society in which resources are, you know, equitably distributed and people have access and everyone feels like they have a say and all of that, like, actually creating that is going to be, like, a lifetime of work, if not many lifetimes of work. And so, I don't know. Like, I feel like we tried to create some things. Some things were really liberating, and, you know, also, like, those structures still exist. So, yeah, Zuccotti Park was not a utopia.
Occupy Wall Street was broken up on November 15, 2011. The park owners cited unsanitary conditions, and the New York Police Department proceeded to evict protesters. Anniversaries happened soon after, but since 2012, there hasn't been any notable gatherings in remembrance and celebration. Here's Marissa.
Yeah, I mean, now, you know, years later, when I come back to the park, I think, like, I guess, like, how much of an anomaly that was, you know? Like, it's, the space now is this concrete block, you know, with people having lunch or passing through, and it's very commercialized, you know, like there are all these street vendors and people selling things. And so, yeah, so it's, I mean, it's sad to come here years later, you know. I come here every once in a while just to remember, you know, I walk through this space, I walk through Wall Street, and I just try to remember like the sense of possibility that was felt.
Producer Marie Che brings us more voices of people involved in the different circles and elements of Occupy Oakland. Whether anarchist or caregiver, there's no denying that Occupy brought communities together.
My name is Christoph Lopor, and I guess I'm an organizer. I was an organizer during Occupy. I was an organizer before that, and I'm still an organizer. Heard about the original call out that was made well before. When did it start? September, I guess. Mm-hmm. And thought that it was not a particularly good idea, plan. The part of the formula they got right was we're going to stay.
What got me to pay attention to Occupy, because from what I saw was that it was a white, mostly white, all middle class movement. And I'm like, whatever. They're just feeling the crunch now that we've always felt, that everyone wanted not to talk about, that our issues were never brought to the table. But when it hit the international scene, then I'm like, oh, this is kind of big.
My name is Samsara Morgan. My involvement with Occupy was that I'm the founder of Children's Village, and I co-facilitated it with, there were three other women that were pretty much the backbone of making sure that space ran, and all kinds of wonderful volunteers. I am the founder of the Parents and Allies Caucus of Occupy Oakland, the Children's Village committee, the Children's Committee, the Occupy Decolonize Birth, Parenting, and Pregnancy Caucus as well. Maybe Occupy Wall Street was like a day old when I bumped into them on Ustream. I think it was Ustream, one of those streaming services. And I was fascinated by what they were doing, you know, and I worked in the financial district, you know, I worked in Tower 1 of the Trade Center. So they were right there doing this stuff. And it was just amazing to me that they were just being so amazing and brave and powerful, and that they were on no news whatsoever, not anything, not Democracy Now, not anything. And so I was really, I think something popped up on Facebook saying that there was going to be an Occupy here in Oakland. I was like, great, that's fabulous. I got involved here in Oakland because at the first planning meeting or two, I saw behaviors that let me feel very uncomfortable. I felt disrespect of elders. I saw a lot of mansplaining going on, a lot of rudeness, disquiet, disrespect going on. And my concern was, as a person who's a mama in this community and a grandma in this community, I knew Oaklanders would be bringing their kids into that space. And there needed to be civility somewhere.
I'm Rebecca Ruiz Sunwoo. I'm an organizer with Idris Sali Foundation.
I was traveling at the time, and I think during when the camps were actually set up in Oakland, I was in New York, and I had gone to Occupy Wall Street, which was a really bizarre experience. I was like with some people of color activists there, and there were some women who were trying to address this person who had like perpetrated multiple sexual assaults on the at the encampment, and just being met with a lot of like, why don't you just call the police, by these like Occupy activists, like, you know, you should just call the police. And they were like, no, you know, we want to be able to address these issues here, and not really being able to. So I had already kind of like had these experiences when I returned to Oakland, and was hoping that the Oakland encampment would be a bit different.
In Oakland, a lot of us had worked together beforehand. A lot of organizers, a lot of networks of people were activated for a meeting. And essentially, the meeting was to determine whether or not, you know, the folks in the East Bay would join the San Francisco occupation or start something in Oakland. And almost, you know, 5 minutes into that meeting, it was just obvious we were going to start something new in Oakland, that we didn't want to join San Francisco.
On Monday, October 10, 2011, the Occupy Oakland encampment went up.
I told a bunch of my friends who came, and the folks that I invited were the only folks that I really knew from Oakland. It was who that movement was. And I still had hope. I still was like, you know what, but we're Oakland. You know, we ahead of the game. We can take this shit over. We can start from the beginning, right? And none of my homies who were in Oakland organizing felt me. Like, they're just like, nah, that ain't our shit. And I said, it ain't our shit, but it's the world shit. And we have a chance to make this some shit. We've all been organizing. We've all been organizing for decades. And we've had absolutely no concessions. So how do we, who are established and who are rooted here, jump onto this shit when it's just starting, before any claim has been laid, and put our demands on the table. They got no demands, right, but we do. We've been had demands, so we put out the demands. But the day it happened, it was so seamless. It was so beautiful. And the people I saw out there, there were so many people. There were so many people of all walks of life. And it was just really beautiful. So I remember that. I remember the times that, it was just beautiful. It was beautiful. I remember that we were able to feed hella people. I remember that hella people who had nowhere to go now had a place to go. I remember people who were addicts stopped being addicts because they felt they had purpose now in life. I remember people who got woke, folks who normally wouldn't get involved, even naysayers, right?
It was a really vibrant little miniature city. And so in that sense, there was it was really established a place. And then that place, there was some feeling that place needed to be in opposition to or in conflict with the city, the state, the people that are causing the problems that we're here essentially to protest.
And on the 25th of October, police violently fought with occupiers in an attempt to destroy the encampment.
I am Sergeant King, peace officer for the city of Oakland. I hereby declare this to be an unlawful assembly. And in the name of the people of the state of California, command all those assembled at Fifth East and Broadway to immediately leave. If you refuse to move now, chemical agents will be used.
All of the cops. There were, that was a flashbang. People didn't run far. That's good. People are starting to cover their faces. Seems like there's gas coming.
Tilt your head up.
Thank you, sweetie.
Andy DiMolanta. We were marching about 1,000 strong down on Broadway. We stopped to take over the plaza. We saw riot police. We changed our course and moved on to Snow Park to assemble, but we came back to the plaza to take back the plaza. And we got closer and closer to the police line, and we were just about there when they kept talking about the penal codes, and they kept saying that they were going to throw tear gas if we didn't move away. That's when, in about 3 minutes, the tear gas bombs, they started flying, and the crowd dispersed, and we moved away from the area of contamination. But we're still strong, we're still out here, and we're not going to quit until we take the plaza back.
The state-sponsored violence brought worldwide attention to Occupy Oakland, and the momentum inspired thousands of people to gather on November 2nd to shut down the Port of Oakland.
Rise up! Shut it down! Oakland is a people's town! Rise up! Shut it down! Oakland is a people's town!
We need to turn that engine off! Hey, come out of the truck! Because the people are not going to let
you home.
You go home the same way that we're all going.
While Occupy Oakland was able to mobilize huge numbers of people, It failed to grapple with its own contradiction, and inevitably, it came to a head with the Decolonize Oakland proposal.
The reason why we wanted the name change
is because we're tired of being alienated.
Despite strong support, the Decolonize proposal didn't pass, and eventually Occupy fizzled out, with the last encampment at Snow Park dismantled. 5 years later, lessons learned.
It was an opportunity for us to learn and really begin to see the power of the state, the invisible hand of government. Like, Gene Kwan and none of the other mayors were really tripping on us. They got yanked from their offices, and then the invisible hand of the state descended and smashed, right? Like, even if Kwan didn't want to agree with us or whatnot, like, she wasn't gonna have a say in how she was gonna deal with this as a mayor, you know? I don't like Gene Kwan, but I think that's what happened. All the new shiny toys that we didn't see before Occupy, all the new riot gear they had, the tanks.
It's hard to say that specifically, that it shifted for me. I mean, like I said, I've been organizing for a while at that point. I think I learned a few things. One of the things that I learned, or one of the things that changed for me, is really appreciating the value of, I guess what I would say is, it feels slightly demeaning to say it, but I guess liberal cover. So when radicals are in the streets, there's an amount of sympathy and, you know, in the population that is really important to maintain. And oftentimes that's difficult because a lot of the things that you have to say, or a lot of your political positions, are still anathema to large portions of the population. But during Occupy, there was a general consensus, I think nationwide, that what was going on was good, that Occupy was in the right, because people were able to see themselves in it and see themselves represented.
You know, our conditions didn't change. We're still organizing. We organized before folks came here. We're still organizing now, or trying to build, if not organizing, build something. I have regret around Occupy because it was a giant wave of gentrification. And at that moment, like, we were having a lull in the gentrification. And then after that, it skyrocketed. So there's regret because of that.
There was sort of like this movement celebrityism that happened. And so people would be arrested, bringing attention to like the police brutality of Raheem Brown. And then they would raise all this money for bail. In the meantime, like, Raheem Brown's like funeral still hasn't been paid for. And like his family was like, you know, struggling on like legal resources. And so there would be all of these resources poured into kind of like this, you know, like social movement hashtag them of like Occupy. And people would be like, we just want to support that movement. And that would kind of like deflect attention away from the people who are really suffering. We really need to center the people most affected. And so one of the dangerous things I think about Occupy was that it was like, where it's just us, like, again, about Occupy Open was like, it's just us against the police. And I was like, no, but we all have different levels of risk and exploitation and oppression, and that needs to be addressed.
My name is Ashoka Finley, and I am a Black radical. I think that Occupy Farm was definitely a victory. This is an important lesson to learn. Victory isn't like a pure state. Like, in the real world, it's not win or lose. It's more negotiated than that. And so, yeah, they got their supermarket, but yeah, we got our farm. And yeah, it's not as big of a farm as we wanted. And realistically, like, they probably have their sights on this land too. But the fact that we have a farm here now is really going to impact that. I think that, yes, it is a victory. I think from any victory, there is also like the subtle defeats or the subtle compromises that we had to make in order to make this happen. And I think there's lessons to be learned. Yeah, I think that the skills that were distributed and taught to people, like thousands of people have visited the Gill Tract and learned like about organic farming and sustainable farming and attended workshops on like everything. And that's a guaranteed win. Like, that is an amazing thing to have happen. And that seed has been planted. And I know people like the guerrilla gardening and the urban gardening movement is larger because of it, like, without a doubt. And that's an amazing win. And so the trajectory of victory is going to be longer than we hope, I think, is probably the lesson that I understand from this.
I think, like, it continues to, like, solidify my belief that, like, the bourgeois cannot ever be in the leadership, ever. And white folks can't either, actually. That's just, like, fully solid. I mean, I already felt that, but after seeing all, I'm like, nah. Even amongst people of color, like, no, y'all need to sit down. When we start having too much invested in capitalism, we get blurry on the destination. And I think the big takeaway, the beautiful takeaway, was, again, the lives that were changed and the ability that we were able to take care of ourselves and each other with nothing based on the surplus of others, right? There was so much surplus of food, of children's needs, of medical supplies, of clothes were always art supplies. You know, there was just so much of access to media that people's voices, there was, you know what I'm saying? There was, we did that off people's surplus and then were able to do for self because of that in the face of City Hall, who didn't want to deal with any of this, you know? So, and you know, that's a beautiful thing. And that act right there of people taking care of themselves and each other could change lives that didn't think they could be changed before. Was really powerful.
And that's it for this week's Making Contact. Special thanks to Apex Express. For more information on their show, go to apexexpress.org. Lisa Rudman is our executive director. Monica Lopez, Marie Che, and Anita Johnson are our producers. Quan Booth is our digital content and community engagement manager. To download a copy of our show or to subscribe to our podcast, please visit radioproject.org. I'm your host, RJ Lozada, and thank you for listening to Making Contact.